Let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. This Week in America, you'll find us online, thisweekinamerica.us. Talented author John Henry Hardy has done it again. 5-star reviews for his action-packed novel, When Brothers Meet, a romance historical premonition of what would happen to the United States and the rest of the world if China continues its quest on controlling the world's oil supply. Called an intense, sometimes disturbing story about a disastrous American future. John Henry Hardy was born in Princeton, New Jersey, served more than 33 years in the U.S. Marine Corps. At the end of his first stint, he attended Rutgers University, was awarded a bachelor's degree there, later a master's degree in business management at the University of Phoenix. As a public affairs officer for the Marine Corps, he wrote numerous newspaper and magazine articles that were published throughout the United States. One of his published articles earned him the George Washington Honor Medal by the Freedoms Foundation at Valley Forge. And for another press release, he was awarded the Freedoms Foundation Honor Certificate. John is the author of several novels, including Whisper in My Ear, a romance historical story of the Vietnam War. We've talked about it on our program. The Place Where the Giant Fell, a romance historical novel about prejudice in pre-statehood Arizona. We've talked about that as well. The Day God Played Baseball, a fictional account of a small-town bully who wants to dominate the county's Little League Baseball title, even if he has to cheat to do so. And the science fiction tale, The Legend of the Phantom Effect. John also taught college for several years, now lives in Mesa, Arizona, with his wife, Lucy, continuing to enjoy his writing career, as we are. John Henry Hardy back with us, author of When Brothers Meet, our guest on This Week in America. John, always a pleasure. Thank you for being back with us on the program.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Rick, and also a privilege to be here and to talk to you, because you always have so interesting questions to throw at me that makes me think about what I wrote.
Well, and you have interesting things to write about, which leads to hopefully interesting questions about the topic. We talked before about, you know, Vietnam. We talked about pre-Arizona statehood back in 1912. Now we're looking ahead. Take us to 2041. What's happening in the country?
Well, Rich, to start off the program, what's happening in the country, the way that I wrote it, okay, is the possibility of what could happen if China continues on its present course of action.
Yes.
And what started me on this whole thing was I read a book called The Great Game, and it was written by Dr. Kent Moores. Dr. Kent Moores is a world-renowned energy expert. He has served as a consultant to the United States president. He has served as a consultant to China, Russia, Venezuela, Argentina, Mexico, Ecuador, and a whole slew of other countries. So he is an expert on oil. And what he outlined in The Great Game was the game that China is currently playing. What China has done is over the years, over the decades, the shortfall of trade for the United States ended up to be a multi-billion dollar grant to the Chinese government, who by keeping the yuan low and keeping their prices low, were able to underbid everybody in the darn world, and especially people or things that were manufactured in the United States, where the standard of living has been higher. However, the Chinese have rapidly caught up, took those billions and billions of dollars in trade that they got from the United States, rebuilt their infrastructure, and went around the world taking that money and buying their way into the oil production of oil-producing countries. Let me give an example. What Dr. Moores points out in his book, The Great Game, is they went into Ecuador, developed the oil fields for Ecuador, and got a commitment from them, like a 20-year commitment, to give them billions of gallons of oil every month. They went into Africa, built apartment houses and for billions and billions of gallons of oil. They went into the South China Sea and usurped the territorial waters of Vietnam, Indonesia, and the Philippines. And what they did, in order to protect it militarily, they dredged up the coral reefs, made them into airfields, and stationed fighter planes on them to keep Vietnam, Indonesia, and the Philippines from ever reclaiming their waters. And the reason is, below the South China Sea, American companies discovered billions and billions of gallons, barrels of oil. And so that's why the Chinese did that. So on this book called When Brothers Meet, I wanted to do a historical novel on what Dr. Kent Moores wrote, but I want to send it as a warning to the American people. It's a wake-up call. I wanted to put it in a readable form so they could understand what the Chinese are actually doing in conjunction with the Russians. This was true when I wrote this book a couple of years ago. It's even more true today. And right now, as everybody knows, there's a lot of turmoil in the world. Donald Trump came in and he is trying to resolve this trade imbalance problem. Last year was $380 billion imbalance trade with China, $100 billion imbalance trade with Mexico. And I can't remember the imbalance trade with Canada, but it was in the billions. So what he's trying to do is people are bleeding us to death and then using it to improve their own lot at the expense of the Americans and the American worker. In this book that occurs in 2041, we have a female American president named Constance Higgins. Constance Higgins is not any weeping willow, not any wilting flower. And she has served in the House, she has served in the Senate, and she knows the government really, really well. But she's got a problem. The problem she inherited was the generations of what other presidents neglected to do. They neglected the support to defend the southern border. They neglected to make China and Russia and India and Saudi Arabia they neglected to make it an even balance of trade. So all of those countries have American money in one regard or another. And what she's trying to do now, she's trying to get the country out of debt. It's so hard to do because by not securing the border, millions of illegal aliens came into the United States, got onto the dole, took American jobs, sent a lot of money back to their own country, and it leaves the United States with staggering debt that China has the bulk of. So what the Chinese are doing, and I think it may happen in the future, they now scoff at the value of the American dollar. And they're going to demand from the United States that they get their payments in gold. Now, if you look at the American debt today and in this novel that I wrote, what the gold that is stored at Fort Knox would barely put a dent in the American debt owed to foreign companies on our T-notes. So the country's in real trouble. So what happens? Russia gets together with China, India, Saudi Arabia, and they decide, we're going to make the Americans make their payments in gold because as far as we are concerned, the American dollar has been devalued so fiercely that we're not going to gain anything out of it. They know the United States does not have that much gold in Fort Knox. So what they're going to do, there's ulterior motives in mind. And China and Russia have gone together and they have concocted an operation called Operation Dragon. And this Operation Dragon is specifically designed to gain a foothold in the United States and eventually control of the oil production in the United States, as well as Canada. Now, Canada has vast oil shale reserves that's helping keep the world going right now, and in particular the United States. And even though we're doing our own drilling, our sideways drilling, and we have access to billions and billions more gallons of oil than we had before, the Chinese know that, and they want that oil. When Dr. Ken Moores wrote his book, he had a philosophy. He looked at the world and all these countries that he went to and found out nobody can really do much with energy unless they have oil. And so his philosophy is that he who controls oil controls the world. And that's the reason why I wrote this book. Constance Higgins goes to a meeting with the Russians, finds out what they want, and says there's no way they can do it. And the Chinese say, if you can't meet your payments in gold, and you renege, then we want what is due us. And we want the state of California. And when we get it, we'll forgive you all your debts. And Russia turns around and says, you owe us a lot of money now, too. And what we want is all of the land in Alaska north of the Arctic Circle. Why do they want that? Because there's hundreds of billions of gallons of oil below the Barents Sea. And by taking the Arctic Circle and all of Alaska that's north of that, they'll have access to that, and it'll cut the United States out of it. So it's a game that's being played to control the world, and essentially by controlling oil. The Saudis partially did it with OPEC. They can set the prices, they can set the production. But imagine if you can do that on a world scale.
Well,
in this book, the United States...
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
In this book, the United States is going to have to fight to keep what it wants. And the Chinese are just as determined as the Russians that they're going to get what they want. And that's the control of the oil fields in the United States and Canada. Now, this is only a hypothetical thing, but it is not an impossibility considering the massive amount of debt that the taxpayer in this country are carrying. And with the influx of more illegal people coming into the country undocumented and not being vetted, we're going to be in debt even more.
That's what's scary as you read this. It's like a great story, and then you stop and think, maybe this actually could come true by 2041. The book is When Brothers Meet. John Henry Hardy is our guest on the program. His website is jhhardy.com. Information there on the book as well. Interesting, again, you do such an excellent job in developing characters. She's got a Secretary of Defense who's interesting, and they tend to disagree, but they do it cordially. They're able to get along. Talk about how you created that conflict there and the Secretary of Defense.
Yeah, the Secretary of Defense was a military general. As a general, he dealt a lot with the Chinese and the Russians, and every general in the American Army, Marine Corps, doesn't matter where they come from, Air Force, they get to know very well what the aims of China and Russia ultimately are, and to this day, ultimately are, okay? Everybody's saying, oh, we're being friendly now. The president's negotiating with him. Huh. You know, they tried that with Hitler. They tried to negotiate with Hitler, too, and it didn't work at all. But anyway, John Mahood realizes there's something else behind this. The Russians and the Chinese have something else going on behind here. And he says to the president, the next time we make a payment to the Chinese for our T-notes, do it a little bit later, because they have put an ultimatum to the United States. They want them to make up all of the back payments that they owe, that they have reneged on, and they want it in gold. And of course, Connie Higgins, the president of the United States, she goes to a meeting. The Chinese reject payment of American dollars, and the United States can't pay in gold. And they said, we want the state of California, and we want all of the land north of the Arctic Circle in Alaska. And she says, the hell you will. And they said, well, we will take what is rightfully ours. John Mahood, before this all transpired, he said, let's do this. Let's make a payment, but make it a few days late and see what they have up their sleeve with the ultimatum. In the meantime, the National Security Agency, of course, is on high alert, as is the CIA and the FBI. And they're monitoring a conversation of a Chinese restaurant owner in Chinatown in San Francisco. And they said something that the CIA and the NSA have never heard of before, and it's called Operation Dragon. And they thought, what the hell is Operation Dragon? We don't have any idea what that is. But they know it's a very influential operation, and that Russia and China, India and Saudi Arabia have formed a coalition and have kept it secret. Consequently, the FBI raised the restaurant. They go right to the man's home, arrest the restaurant owner and his partner, but they can't bring any charges against him. He had no information. In the meantime, an FBI agent, a CIA agent, excuse me, by the name of Hawkins, goes into the restaurant at nighttime, and he's looking around. There's nothing at home that they can see. But there's got to be something in a restaurant to say what this Operation Dragon is. And he searches the place. And he does a thorough job. And when he gets down to the basement, he sees this table standing there. And he wonders, what is the table doing down here in the corner? So he walks over, and he sees these wires going up through the ceiling. And he's kind of suspicious. And he looks underneath the table with his flashlight, and he sees this ring. He crawls underneath the table, and he pulls up on this ring. And all of a sudden, there's a big bright light. And it turns out there's a sub-basement below the table. And he takes out his revolver, and he goes downstairs. Nobody's there. But he sees in the corner, he sees this thing. It looks like a radio, but he's never seen one like it before. It's got all kinds of Chinese markings on it. He doesn't know what it's for. But he sees the wires going up to the roof, so he knows that it's some kind of a transmitter and a receiver. So he goes in, he gets the FBI to come in. They work in the lab overnight to make a box that looks just like this. And they take the real one to see what it is and put this fake in its place. In the meantime, to cover up what they've done, they have Hawkins set the restaurant on fire. And he does. And lo and behold, just as dawn is breaking, up rushes the owners. They want to rush inside to get this thing out, this receiver, this transceiver, but the firemen won't let them in. So consequently, they believe that the transceiver is destroyed in the fire. In the meantime, the FBI gets a search warrant, goes back to the owner's home, and they find at least one of his desk, this cupboard. And they can see a little bit of scraping marks on the floor where something has opened, and they pound on it, and it pops open, and inside is a book. It's got all kinds of codes in it, but the FBI doesn't know what it's for. So now they take the owner and his wife into custody, and the partner and his wife into custody, and they refuse to talk. And they know as an American citizen, they don't have to talk to anything. So what the U.S. government says, hey, you know, this thing is of national security. We don't know what this is, but we think it has something to do with this set that we got. And so what they do is they take them to a CIA holding tank. They put them up before a window, and they got them tied in a chair, this owner. And they open up the curtains, and in there is a courtyard. And he looks down, and he sees soldiers in the courtyard. And lo and behold, here comes his wife across. And they tie her to this pole in the middle of the thing. And he realizes they're going to execute her. And the CIA agent says, you don't tell us what's going to happen, we're going to kill your wife. Or I'm going to do it right now. Well, of course, this guy shook up. You know, it's his wife. You know, this is his love of his life. So he sees this. He sees these people with the rifles ready to take commands from the sergeant in charge of the firing squad. He says, I tell what happened. So they take him out, and they drag him into another room, and they said, what do these codes mean? And what do they have to do with this machine? And this guy's scared to death because he knows, you know, that the Chinese, the Tong, if they find out that he's told them this, will kill him. The Tong is the Chinese mafia in Chinatown. So he tells them what the codes are, and they realize that this is a war machine. This machine can transmit and receive signals. Although not every set that's around can do that, only certain sets can, and this is the one. This set can issue commands to a satellite. This satellite is programmed with tens of thousands of different commands that cover almost every conceivable military mission. And so if by sending signals, and he tells them what the codes mean in sending the signals, the Americans now have a way of sending a code that the Chinese don't know they have. However, the Chinese are very suspicious people. So what they do is they set up a ruse that John Mahood immediately recognizes. He says to the president, we're not going to do anything with this. Let's listen to some of the transmissions. And in there is a transmission that they're going to invade Attu, which is an island off of the coast of Alaska that the Japanese invaded in World War II. So the president says, we can't let them invade American territory. There's American citizens there, American businesses. And John Mahood says, you know what? I've been to Alaska. He said, on that island, the only thing on there is fishing villages. There's not a lot of manufacturing. There's not a lot of people. Why would they suddenly want to invade this thing when the whole of Alaska is there, Anchorage and Juneau? And why wouldn't they want to do that? Why are they going to do this little island? He said, I think this is a ruse. He said, I don't think we should do anything. And the other cabinet members agree with him. I said, let's just see what they do. If they take Attu, all they're going to have is this little island, 326 square miles, and all it's got is fishing villages on there, any points, and a little radio station. So lo and behold, the American Navy detects a submarine off the coast of Attu. And lo and behold, when the day comes for the invasion, nothing happens. So now the Americans know it was a ruse. It was testing to see whether or not they had got a hold of that transmitter receiver from the Chinese restaurant. So now they think that now the Russians and the Chinese think, no, we're safe. We got it. They would have defended the territory, and they didn't. So lo and behold, the Americans, of course, begin sending out false information. When the invasion force comes to go into California off the coast, the Americans send the Russians a false signal, do not invade Alaska yet above the Arctic Circle. We have this thing going, and we have it well in hand. Stay where you are for now. Well, the Russians are thinking about, you know, what this is all about. Why can't we invade Alaska? What are they doing? Chinese force comes to America. They land on the coast of California. The American army is too weak to stop them. They push the American forces inland and isolate a battalion of Rangers on a set of mountains, and they can't get off. They come in around the mountains, surround the mountains, while the rest of the American army, or what's left of it, is retreating. So now we got this Ranger battalion stuck on this mountaintop. As it turns out, there is a Ranger in that battalion, and his name is Mike Dalton. His father is a physician. His mother is a very successful real estate agent. And he was the heartthrob of the Columbia campus. He was the hero, a sports hero. And the woman just loved him. He was handsome. He was tall, very smart, very athletic. And he had a younger brother named Sean Dalton, who was shorter than his brother, not nearly as handsome, and not nearly as athletic or talented or smart as his brother was. And he was kind of the black sheep of the family. He didn't even look like his brother. He looked like his mother. The father, he looked like his father. The older boy looked like his father, handsome, debonair, very slick with his words. And so this kid is kind of left out. And then one day, the older Dalton brother, Mike Dalton, he brings home his girlfriend. And she's absolutely gorgeous. She was born in Scotland. Her name is Kyla McGregor, a pre-med student at Columbia. And this kid, Sean, the younger brother, takes a look at her. And for the first time in his life, he falls in love. Oh, my God. You know, this is woman is gorgeous, you know.
Yes.
And he figured, oh, my God, he can't. He doesn't say anything. But the girl, this Kyla McGregor, had a sister who was kind of autistic. And so she's listening to the conversation at the table, and she realizes that nobody is including this kid, Sean, in the conversation. And she thinks about her sister with autism, who can't communicate a lot with everybody. And she kind of puts the onus on the other people at the table by looking at this kid and saying, they're treating this kid as if he's autistic, but he's not. And he hasn't said a word. So she turns around and she says something to him. I hear you're a great player in the band, you know. And the mother and father looking at her like, what are you talking to him for? This is the kid that's
yes.
the successful kid in the thing. And so she realizes this. And so she goes back to school. The son, Mike Dalton, goes back to college. He graduates. He joins the armies, and he's going to go into an elite Army Rangers in the Army because he's more interested in the military career. But what happens is Kyla wants to talk to this kid, Sean, and tells him she understands him. So while his mother and father are out visiting friends and Mike's still busy at school, she goes over to the house and she knocks on the door, and there's this kid, Sean, alone. Well, he's really shook up. This is a woman that he loves,
yeah.
and she's here by herself. So she takes him in the house and she starts to tell him, I understand what's happening in your house. I understand. I can see that they're not including you in conversations. You're like the black sheep of the family. Well, when Sean hears that, he's beginning to think this good girl, he likes me, but she doesn't. She's just sympathetic and she understands
right.
him. And so she starts telling him, my sister is autistic. She starts telling about her sister, and her sister had died recently, and kind of was very upset about it. And when she's telling him about it, she starts crying. She's embarrassed, and so she's leaving the house. Just as his parents are walking into the house, and she goes out crying, runs past them, and the mother and father are looking at what the hell happened here. And so they said to Sean, what did you do to her? And Sean says, I didn't do anything. And they kind of say, well, we're going to tell Mike what you did. You did something to her, and I hope he beats the hell out of you for it, because she's a nice girl. Well, this kid, Sean, he's like, I haven't done anything. Sure enough, that evening when Mike comes home, he marches right upstairs to Sean sitting in his room, and he's working on a paper. And he said, what the hell did you do to Kyla when she came over here? He said, I didn't do anything to him. He said, you're a goddamn liar. And he takes his fist and he hits his brother. He's got a college ring on. Hits his brother in the side of the head, knocks him out. And And the kid's got a brain bleed, but they don't know it yet. But he's not regaining consciousness. So they took him over to the emergency room because his father was a doctor, could tell he was unconscious, like in a coma, took him over to the hospital. And, of course, they had to work on him. They said, he's got a brain bleed. What happened to him? And so, of course, to save the older son, they're not going to say they got into a fight. All they said was he was high on drugs, and he fell down the stairs and hit his head on the banister.
Yes.
Oh, for God's sakes, you know. And Mike, of course, the kid doesn't know that. But when he finally comes to and they save his life, he finds out what happened. And his brother apologizes to him. But you shouldn't have done that to Kyla. Well, when he confronts Kyla later on, she said, oh, he didn't do anything to me at all. She said, I was upset because I was talking to him about Allison. And she said, and every time I think about her anymore, I just lose it. Well, they go down to the hospital to pick up Sean. He's gone. He had gone home. And when he went home, Kyla and Mike were there down in the basement in a bedroom that they were using as a trysting place. And just Sean walks into the house. He can hear them, but he doesn't know what it is. They think there might be a burglar in the house. So he goes into the kitchen, gets a knife, and he tiptoes down the stairs. And he's listening to this. And he opens up the door, and there's Kyla on the bed naked. And there's her brother. They're making love. Well, of course, he's really upset about this whole thing. And he wants to kill the both of them. You know, she for hurting him and making her think that she was in love with him, and Mike for what he did to him, not only in the hospital, but for loving Kyla McGregor too and right. having stole her heart. But he can't do it. It's his brother. So he drops the knife, tiptoes back up the stairs without them knowing he'd be in there, packs his bags, and he leaves. And he's not coming back. He knows he can't come back. And he disappears. And, of course, when Kyla and Mike come out of the room, the door's ajar. The door was closed when they were in there, and there's a knife on the floor. So he grabs the knife, thinking that there's a burglar or something in the house, searches the whole house. Nobody's there. When the mother and father come home that nighttime, they couldn't find him at the hospital. They thought he probably came home. They go up into his room, and they find out he's packed his bags and he's gone. And they're kind of sorry about it, you know, and the father said, we can't have no idea where he is. Let's look at his waste paper basket. He wrote anything, a note, and scrambled it up. So he reached into the waste paper basket, and the father comes up with a note in there. And on it, he realizes that his son had registered for college. It was a community college, but he had registered into college. He was going to make something out of his life. And the reason he was going to do that was so he could probably steal Kyla from his brother.
Yes, capture her attention. Yes.
Yeah, his motivator.
We got a couple minutes left in the program. This is just a fascinating story. You've got all of this international intrigue going with the story of the brothers. This is a great story you're telling.
Yes, and I'm going to end it really quick. Chinese invade California, push the Americans back. But what happens is because of the Second Amendment, there are millions and millions of people in the United States who were armed, which is the reason General Yamamoto didn't invade California after December 7th. 1941 victory. He knew that the American population was armed and that if he came to the beaches of California, there's going to be a million guns waiting for him. And that's what happens. These people who are patriots, American citizens, they take their guns, their ammunition, to rush into the West Coast and they rush into the South Coast where the Mexicans have an army working in conjunction with the Russians and the Chinese. Well, it so happens that Mike is trapped on the mountains. And Sean hears from people talking that there's a Ranger battalion on the mountains. It's the 3rd Ranger battalion. And he realized that's where my brother is. And even though he's angry at his brother, he can't let his brother die. So he takes this motorcycle gang. And to make it more succinct, they attack people, the Chinese. The Chinese turn their attention toward this motorcycle gang that Sean is now heads. And they concentrate to fire a power on him. In the meantime, the Ranger battalion gets out. And Sean is laying on the battlefield. He's dying. And Mike sees a movement, and he says, well, this guy is dead. He's alive. And he goes over, and he turns this kid over, and it's his brother. And he can't believe it. What the hell are you doing here? He said, I'm doing the same thing you're doing. I'm defending my country. So happens that he said, I'm going to take you over to the hospital. He said, no, it's too late. I'm dying, Mike. He said, I want to stay here with my brothers. They're the only ones that really cared about me. And so Mike walks away, leaves his brother lying there in the dust to die with his gang members. And at the end, they pay tribute to him. They make him out a hero because he is one that the Chinese have stopped the regression, but they're staying in California for a while. but they're not doing any more fighting. They're not pushing the Americans back. The Canadians have now gotten into this because they realize the Chinese can march up the coast right into Canada and take over their oil fields. So they get involved into the battle, help turn the tide. And in the end, Sean is a hero. But what he had done was, while his brother was away in Army training, he was really angry at his brother, and he was angry at Kyla. And he gets into her dorm in the college, and he uses a date rape drug to seduce her. She doesn't know what's going on. She can't remember anything. But he leaves, and of course, she gets pregnant. And her boyfriend, Mike, thinks she's been cheating on him. And with his dying words, Sean tells him what happened. Now, the brother wants to strangle him right there, but he said, he just saved my life and the life of a lot of the people in my battalion. I can't do that. And so he dies, and when he goes back, and he apologizes to Kyla and said, I know you were cheating on my brother did it. And, of course, she was very angry at his brother at that time, and then he tells her he's dead.
Yes.
He saved my life.
That's just so many things going on in the story. That's what makes the books by John Henry Hardy so fascinating, so much fun to read. When Brothers Meet, the book we're talking about, America in 2041. Like I say, international intrigue. You've got family intrigue as well in the book. All the elements are there. It's available at John's website, jhhardy.com. Information there on John's other books as well. You'll be able to link onto that by going directly to our website, thisweekinamerica.com.us. John, it's always a pleasure to have you on the program. So much more to talk about. We'll have you back because you've got a couple more books that we're interested in finding out a lot more about, and we will during the course of the next programs. Thank you for being with us on the program. Excellent job with When Brothers Meet.
It's been my pleasure, Rick, as always, and I thank you for having me on the program. I really do.
It is our pleasure. Once again, When Brothers Meet, John Henry Hardy, the author, our guest, jhhardy.com, the website. You'll find all the information and link on directly to John's website by going to our website, thisweekinamerica.us.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.